from WYPR
and PRX
in collaboration with the West Virginia Folklife Program.
It's Out of the Blocks.
One neighborhood.
Everybody's story.
Everybody's story.
Charleston's West Side used to be, I guess, 30, 40 years ago, a very good part of the city. And like most of the inner cities, the neighborhood has changed.
A lot of people were like, look at all the negatives. I was saying, well, look at all the positives that we have. Look at the opportunities that we have to plant seeds in these kids' lives.
People were like, oh, that's where all the crimes are. That's where all the drugs are. But I moved here, and I lucked into a really great block. My neighbors look out for each other. We talk to each other. We have community barbecues in the summer. So it's really cool to have that as well. But at first, it was intimidating.
Around here in this neighborhood, the kids see a lot of grown folks stuff. You know, they got to deal with a lot of things that they shouldn't deal with as kids, but it's the reality is what it is, you know.
From producer Aaron Hinken
and Wendell Patrick,
with West Virginia State folklorist Emily Hilliard,
Out of the Blocks,
Charleston, West Virginia's West Side.
Right after this.
So you have a photo album here you
want to
share?
The reason I want to show it to you, because it's very important. There they are. Okay. Here they are, the young kids that I took over. Here they are in there. They're beginning to grow up now. And now, here are the children now. They're grown. If you know what these kids came through, can you imagine a mother and father in prison and nobody? So I feel so blessed that I was able to help them. They're miracle children. My name is Thomas Tolliver. Well, actually, I've been going into prisons about 30 years. Other people may go to preach. I go to Manor. And the very first case I had, this lady, this family that I ran into, she says, my husband's in federal prison. I said, husband? And this young lady ended up with four children. So I began to work with this one family. One day, my wife and I had them over to dinner, the kids are prisoners, about four of them. And casually, she asked one of the children, do you know where these green beans came from? They said, Kroger's. And everybody laughed but us. I found that was very pitiful to know that we have kids that didn't know how food was produced that they ate. So the very next day, I went out and began to look for land that I could start a garden. So Charleston Urban Renewal let me have this property here. See these here? They're called container beds. Right now, what's growing in here is winter greens. What grew in here was tomatoes, corn, and green beans, squash, and turnips. We've already harvested this. It was a progression from men and children of prisoners to an urban farm. Also have an orchard there. It's a peach and apple orchard in there. As a boy, about 13 or 14, I plowed with a horse. I grew up growing gardening so we would have adequate food to eat. So that is really the beginning of my knowledge of growing food for my, you know, for the way I came up. I'm so thankful the way I turned out that in my family, now what I try to do, what I've done with my family, can I do this with the neighbor, with the homeless and street people? Can I do that with them? This is inclusive. Anybody who wants to come in and join with me, they can. And like I said, it's farming. It can be fun and then to watch stuff grow and then eat it. It amazes a lot of children too, you know, even adults. It was so funny, though. I've had funny experiences. I had a bunch of kids, and I had a bunch of tomato plants, and we was planting them. I mean, I was showing them sort of made like regimentary. I'd drill a hole, another person would come by and drop the tomato in, another would tamp it. You know, I had a little, it was going good. But I looked back around, there was a kid pulling them up. I said, son, please don't touch another one of those tomatoes. And well, the other kids wanted to kill him, but I couldn't figure out why he was doing that, you know. And I said, there are some mental things, but, you know, if you get kids interested, they love to do this. If you notice that a tomato rottens from the inside out, so when you deal with people, you better deal with the inside so you can develop the outside. So if that's the case with a tomato, then we are seeing people rotten from the inside. So let's deal with that. And in a progression of time, maybe they'll develop better.
Okay, our showcases house all the very, very best. This is a rare piece.
That's like a porcelain dove.
It's a porcelain dove, and it has all the information on it. Almost everything we have has all the history behind it. My name is Tammy Fowler, and we are at Trophy Antiques and Hair. We do estate sales for our customers, and we've acquired things from people who want to sell one item or a whole estate, and it just grew and grew and grew. And a lot of people come in, they say, how do you get around in here? Well, if you want to look at my shop, you're going to come and look at it crowded. There's hundreds and hundreds of pieces here.
Let me ask you, have you had like that antiques roadshow moment where you realized you had like a super duper hot item?
We've had it several times, especially in attics. You'll be doing an estate, you'll dig in an attic, and there's something you've never, ever seen before. So, yeah, it's good. Yeah, you get addicted, and you can't wait to, you ask them on the phone when they call you, what do I expect to see here? And sometimes they can tell you one item that makes you say, I'll be there in an hour or so. Is that okay?
It's like walking through a museum to be in here.
It's kind of a museum, and I don't do any junk in our shop as far. A lot of people like junk, and it's okay. My mother told me that's how you make good money when I started out, buying little things that don't cost a lot of money. And our things are nice. They're not overpriced because we have this shop every day. And the reason I can stay in business is I have my hair business on top of this, so we're always doing something for someone.
Guess who was here this morning?
Oh. When my customers come in the door, they come first, regardless. I'm here at 8 o'clock every morning.
May I compliment you on your hair? You have beautiful, very voluminous hair.
I have a lot of hair.
What's your secret?
I have a little bit of natural curl in my hair. I frost it, and it's just good hair. I don't spend a lot of time on it, but I never come to work with my hair wet, and I never come to work with my hair straight. I think you should see what the customer wants you to look like, so that's what I do. People nowadays wear real straight hair. My ladies are in their 70s and up to 90. Now, would an older lady look good with straight, long hair? No, they would not. Hair looks good, pulled up, pulled back a little bit, and have a flare to it. So as long as I'm here, that's what you're going to see from me.
Okay, I'm going to leave that conditioner in there because it makes your hair take good.
Trophy Hair Design. Is it American False Story or just cut glass? Okay. Could you bring me a picture of it? We lived on a farm in Mason County, and on Saturday mornings, we'd take our cream to Ripley to sell it. And every Saturday, my mom had to stop along the highway and look at old big plant stands, and they were made out of oak. And I think I still have every one she ever bought. And I just began to think, oh, that does look pretty good. And then, so the shop grew and grew, and I had my mother with me until she was 95, and she would always say, you don't need that, but that sure is a pretty piece. And, you know, I'd end up with it. So my mom, the way she raised us was to be honest and sell things and not tell someone a big story about them that wasn't true. And so far, I mean, it's been successful for me, as you can tell by the shop. So I go right back to how I was raised in the country.
I can tell you must have had a really close relationship with her, huh? You loved her a lot?
That's why I like my older ladies. They just fit right in with what I do.
I asked her, I said, does Paula or anyone else know about you? She said, if they called me once in a while, they'd know about me. She said, I didn't call them and tell them I fell.
Oh.
I'm telling you, she's independent.
Yes, she is.
But, oh, I did her hair back, and I did it kind of fancy, and she felt so much better.
Well, I'm sure she did.
You always have to think about the air. You know, that's the real thing for us. It's like a bow for a string player. If you can't control that, you can't play. My name is Bob Tarizziani, and we're in my living room in Charleston, West Virginia, on the west side. And I moved here mostly just because I could live in the same city where I worked, which was nice. Well, I play in the West Virginia Symphony, and I like to teach, so I get to do a lot of that. What I really wanted to play when I was a kid was the saxophone, but I wasn't big enough to hold it. So somebody had the bright idea to give me a clarinet, and I've never managed to get rid of it since. So it's interesting. Woodwind instruments play almost entirely on the overtone series. We only have this many actual fundamental notes. Everything after that is a harmonic. For any instrument, it's very easy to get bogged down in technical issues and always worrying about, am I playing all the notes? Am I playing them in tune? Am I playing, you know, whatever. And that's important. That really does matter. But it doesn't matter very much if you're boring. The real issue is, how can I take all of that and try to say something? So I'm going to, I decided I'd play a little piece. Well, it's not a little piece. It's part of an opera by Puccini called Tosca. In the last act, the main male character is awaiting execution, as happens in operas. And he sings this amazing aria. But what's even more amazing about it, the clarinet gets it first. E lucevan le stelle by Puccini. I think it's wonderful that we have this connection to people who lived 300 years ago. And I mean, I feel like I know Beethoven or Brahms as well as I know people who are alive today. And truthfully, I only know a small part of those people, but I don't know much more of, you know, my friends that I see all the time. I mean, everybody's a mystery. But these people left behind something that I can explore that is not just words. It's, I mean, I have nothing against words. My house is full of books. Reading will give me facts, but music does that immediately.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I like this sign here.
Oh, yeah.
Read that sign for me. What's that say?
Be humble, stay hungry, always hustle.
You put that slogan up there?
Yeah, but I seen it one day and I really liked it. I mean, it makes a lot of sense to me. If you're not humble, you really can't make any money. And especially with this crowd here, you have to make them feel like they're at home, which this is their neighborhood. You can't just come in here and say, hey, I'm better than you. You won't get any business like that.
Hey, what you doing, Mina?
Sally.
Oh, she grouchy this morning, huh?
My name is Sally Janum. We're at Sally's Market and Deli, 829 Central Avenue.
All right, have a good day.
It's like a convenience store. We sell cigarettes, blunts, candy. We have a menu. We sell Philly cheesesteaks, burgers, hot dogs, gyros. I'm originally from Palestine. I'm from a little city called Turkerim, and now we live here.
Sally's Market, it's named after you, belongs to you. This is your spot.
Yes, it is. I'm very grateful. I had the opportunity to open up my own little business, you know, with my dad's help, because a lot of people don't have that. My dad actually used to own a restaurant, too. So ever since then, I've been helping him work around convenience stores and restaurants.
Is this your ultimate goal? I mean, what's in the future for you?
No, I want to finish school, go into law school, and become a lawyer, hopefully like an immigration lawyer or a criminal defense lawyer, something like that. But I need time to do that.
Talk to me about what you've studied so far. I mean, you've been studying.
Yeah, I have a bachelor's degree in criminal justice.
You got more cream and sugar than coffee in there.
I like a little coffee with my cream and sugar.
There's a lot of people. That's why when I studied criminal justice, there's a lot of people that have, like, drug offenses and stuff like that, and they talk to me about it. I feel like I'm some of these people's therapist here. I swear I feel like a therapist. I just feel like a lot of people feel comfortable telling me their problems because I'm willing to listen. I'm willing to give them my advice, and I'm very blunt. I don't want to, like, sugarcoat it or anything. I'll just tell them straight away, like, that's wrong. You should not be doing that. And that's why I want to be a lawyer, because I would, like, no, that's wrong. I don't want to be with somebody for doing something wrong. I don't know.
How long have you been here behind the counter?
Almost a year. Yeah, a year and a half. I work a lot. I don't have a social life anymore because I don't do anything but work. And hopefully when I get somebody to help me out more here, then I will go back to what I was, my goal is.
You need anything else? All right.
When I was a kid, I had a lisp. You can still hear it from time to time. And I stuttered. I was 5-6 years old when everybody else was going to play on the playgrounds. I played by myself because it was embarrassing because people couldn't understand me when I talked. So that's when I started playing basketball and I fell in love with it. Just me and a basketball. My name is Levi Phillips. I live here at 831 Main Street in Charleston, on Charleston's west side. When I got to junior high, there was a teacher, her name was Lisa Hicks, and she was a speech pathologist. So she taught me to speak out of the back of my throat, and I became more social then. And that's when I started playing. Junior high is when I started playing on teams. Then I got to high school. We won 48 games in a row, which is still a West Virginia record. And I played with two people that went to WVU, West Virginia University, with me.
Then as he went on to college, he's infamously known for making the first basket at the new West Virginia Coliseum. My name is Justin Phillips, and I am the son of Levi Phillips. His group of guys at WVU was the first all-black integrated team in NCAA Division I men's basketball. They said there wasn't a thing Levi Phillips couldn't do on the basketball court. And he was a guy that they said, well, you know, it looks like he's not playing hard. He's just gliding around the court. And then the game's over and he has a triple-double. And, you know, so that's just the type of player that, you know, everyone tells me he was. And that's what I've seen on film as well.
What happened with your basketball career after college?
Well, after college, 1974, I believe it is, I got drafted by the Baltimore Bullets. I wasn't getting to play very much. I was like the 12th guy. I got a check every 2 weeks, so I like that. But they traded me to the 76ers, Philadelphia 76ers. I think they got two eggs and a steak sandwich for me. But I never was a star.
My dad is one of the most humble guys that I've ever met. He won't tell you anything about, you know, all the incredible things that he's done. You know, I hear all this stuff from his friends and his coaches and his teammates. You know, they've told me all these things. He's very humble. And he also showed, you know, so he taught me humility. You know, you let your actions speak for you.
My son, when he was in the seventh grade, his coach cut him from the team. And 4 years later, he was probably the best player in the state.
I think they knew I was Levi Phillips' son, and they expected a whole bunch. And I just wasn't, you know, I wasn't physically ready at the time. And so, you know, and the coach was a good guy, and he's still a friend to this day. But what he pulled me to the side, and he said, I know your dad was a star. He said, but maybe this isn't for you. The long story short, 3 years later, I run into him, and he said, you are the best player in the state. And I was like, and I wanted to say, you know, I told you so. I wanted to tell you that then, but again, I could hear my dad ringing in my mind and said, we lead by our actions, not by the things we say. He said, what we're going to do is we're going to work even harder. So, you know, for the next, 3 or 4 years, every night, come on, son, we're going to the gym. And I attribute that to that coach coming back 3 years later saying, you are the best player in the state. You know, and it's simply because my dad took the time to mold me into that player.
We have three different generations of basketball players. 2 years ago, my grandson won the state championship in West Virginia.
On the day, 50 years to the day that my father won his championship, I mean, it was spectacular. It was something to see.
The day that he won, I cried. That's what I remember most. I cried. I mean, I'm not ashamed to admit it. I cried like a baby. It was a very, very special moment for me. I'm just so proud.
It's out of the blocks.
Charleston, West Virginia, West Side.
One neighborhood.
Everybody's story.
Everybody's story.
Everybody's story.
There are very few things that we can't figure out how to fix. I'm Steve Basham. We're at Stephen Stacy Service Center, 130 Virginia Street West in Charleston. Electrical work, computer work, diagnostic work, that's kind of my specialty. I've sort of evolved into where I work at teaching the guys what they need to know to do that for me, and then I'm available if they need me.
Right now I'm just replacing a battery on a Hyundai Elantra.
This is Cody Creighton, one of the most promising young mechanics I've ever been around. He's been a tremendous asset for us.
Voltage is pretty low on it. I guess the cold weather's kind of knocked it out, but hopefully we'll get it going here shortly.
The proliferation of these computer systems is tremendous. Some of these newer cars have 18, 22, 25 different processors communicating on as many as three different types of networks. So it's not for the faint of heart or the untrained. Biggest thing we run into with the young people out of the technical schools is they understand the electronics better than they do the basics. They've never thrown a rag over a carburetor to make it a little bit richer to see if that makes it run smoother.
Since I've come here, I learned way more than I even thought there was to do with cars, and especially the older stuff, because we learned, you know, a little bit about the newer stuff in school, but they didn't teach us really anything about the older cars.
I just always loved mechanical things. Mom said when I was a teenager that she never had to wonder where I was. All she had to do was go out and get me by the ankles and pull me out from under whatever I was working on. So,
what was your first car?
Of all the crazy things, Dad and I traded a mini bike that we'd used for hill climbing for a 59 Volkswagen that I had found of, at all places, Royal Oldsmobile. We were able to work it out because the salesman wanted the mini bike for his son. Well, apparently he didn't grasp what I had told him, because the mini bike had been modified pretty extensively for hill climbing. And lordy, from a stop up to about 10 miles an hour, it was vicious. That's about how far you had to run before you got to the hill. Of course, he got on the thing, and not understanding what he was into, opened the throttle on it and it didn't move, so he opened the throttle some more, and then when it reached its RPM for the clutch to catch, it almost took him through the front window of Royal Oldsmobile down there. He got out to where it was up in the air, and he was holding it by the throttle, and of course he couldn't close the throttle as long as he was holding the bike by the throttle, but that didn't deter him from wanting it. So we ended up giving $150 and a mini bike for my first car. I was 15 at this point, but had a lot of fun with that one.
I've never seen one this bad.
You got a situation in here, it sounds like, yeah?
Oh, this is nasty. Rat got in here and ate the wiring. It ate all the door wiring, ate part of the main harness here, and ate part of the dash harness.
You sure the rat's not still in there?
Oh, yeah, because there's a dash panel. But he caused some damage to this one. I'm Jeremy, and I've been here 7 years.
Oh, that's the garbage.
It's under the dash.
The garbage bag full of candy wrappers.
And fast food wrappers.
Oh.
Clean the trash out of your car. This is the reason.
Well, good luck with these wires. You literally got a rat's nest here.
Yeah, big time.
Actually, I was working at Foot Locker. Got passed over for a couple of promotions, so I got mad one day, walked out, walked across the street and rode in barber school. That was in 1999. This is Kevin Wright. We're at Carson's Barbershop on 48 Virginia Street West on Charleston on the west side. Actually, it's a lot of book work first before you actually go out on the floor to cut here. So, yeah, it's a Then your first haircut, I mean, I was really, really nervous. Didn't know it, you know. I was sitting there, grippers in my hand, shaking the instructor, like, go ahead, you know.
How did it turn out? Were they satisfied?
Well, it turned out pretty good because, like you say, when you first start, the instructors are with you. So, that, you know, they're not going to let you mess up too bad, you know. Yeah, so.
Now, almost 20 years later, are you glad you made that decision to walk out of Foot Locker and go to barbering school?
Oh, yes. I mean, I enjoy what I do, so, you know, I mean, so, yeah, it works out pretty well for me.
Hey, you here, buddy.
There he is. How you doing, buddy?
Just a trim up on the hair and a shave.
Keeping the mustache, taking everything else off?
Yes, sir.
Tell me your name.
Larry Taylor.
You're a longtime customer of Kevin's?
Been a while. He's awfully good. I'm lucky I found him.
You've got a good head of hair.
Well, for an old man, I'm doing all right.
Is this your neighborhood? You live around the west side?
Yeah, Wyoming Street. Yeah. I was a mailman for 41 years. I was carrying the Capitol Street route at the time. I'd stopped at McDonald's for lunch, and a girl that I knew and went to school with said, I got somebody I want you to meet. And I said, if it's not very far, I can go. So she took me up there to meet her, and we met. About 2 to 3 weeks later, we was married.
Wow, that was a whirlwind romance, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So you were on your postal route the first day when you met her?
Yeah.
She couldn't resist a man in uniform?
Well, I couldn't resist her, because she had been a majorette at Stonewall. She was very pretty.
How long have you guys been together now?
31 years. I'd already got fixed because I knew I didn't want no more kids.
You guys met later in life. You got married later in life.
Yeah, I was 43, or she was 43, and I was 49.
It must be nice to meet someone later in life and have that kind of second lease on life. I guess it makes you feel young again, I'm going to guess.
Yeah, and having a vasectomy makes you want to go to bed earlier.
Yeah, maybe I won't ask you to elaborate on that. So you're still together now? Tell me, it sounds like you obviously care about her very much and you care for her these days.
Yes. Yeah, I don't know how long I'm going to have her because she's fading, but she's still around right now. She's 74 and I'm 80. We've had a good life.
I'm Teresa Martin. I teach second grade here at Westside Elementary, and I'm also one of the Girl Scout leaders. Well, it's 4:30, and it's Tuesday. We have Girl Scouts every Tuesday from 4 to 5 here. Today, we're making a little clay pot snowman that I found on Pinterest.
So it's like a little white pot. There's a orange nose on there with paint and little cheeks with pink paint.
My name is Khadija.
My name is Adriana.
My name is Nawa.
My name is Maya. I'm 7 and a half, and I'm in second grade.
Do you like Girl Scouts? What's your favorite thing about Girl Scouts?
That when we don't know what to do, we just order pizza and have a dance party.
We do a lot of crafting. The girls like to craft, so we do a lot of crafting. The past month, we have spent practicing our flag ceremony so we could do the Veterans Day program here and bring the colors in. Miss Dunlap has been working on the technology and the photographing badge with the kids.
And we worked on programming Ozbots, and they're little robots, and they take different colored markers, and the different colors make them do different things. They had a lot of fun just exploring and seeing what they could make them do. My name is Kathy Dunlap, and I teach second grade here on the west side. I'm also a Girl Scout leader. I hope they're getting a strong belief in themselves and the idea that with some effort, they can accomplish anything they want to. We have a lot of really bright, good girls in our group, and I hope that they're getting that self-esteem built that they need.
This is the promise. On my honor, I will try to serve God and my country
and to help people at all times and to live by the Girl Scout law.
And to live by the Girl Scout law.
And the Girl Scout law is, I will do my best to be honest and fair, friendly and helpful, considerate and caring, courageous and strong, and responsible for what I say and do, and to respect myself and others, respect authority, use resources wisely, make the world a better place, and to be a sister to every Girl Scout. So it's very, it's long, but it's, every line is just impactful. I am Katharina Fritzler. I am at the Girl Scout Volunteer Resource Center on the west side of Charleston, West Virginia, and I am the Senior Program Manager for this organization. We serve 61 counties, and we're in four different states, which is kind of unique to our council. We serve girls in Maryland, Virginia, West Virginia, and Ohio. And what makes us unique is we're all in Appalachia, which is traditionally a poor income bracket. And so we give girls this experience that maybe they wouldn't get elsewhere, and we try to make it affordable and low cost as a council to help these families give their girls an experience so they can dream bigger and aim higher than maybe they thought about in the past.
Hey, Axel, come here. Come.
Good boy.
High five.
You're such a good boy.
Lay down. My name's Walter Tucker. I'm one of the musical directors here at Mary C. Snow Westside Elementary, and I'm Axel's handler, which is our therapy dog. He travels to all the classrooms with our counselor, so he gets the opportunity to interact with all the children here in the school. Yep, he's sniffing the mic right now. One student of ours that was coming in the morning, autistic student, he would cry every morning, and when he would come down the hallway and he would see Axel, he would stop crying. So every morning that student would come down, just spend like 5 minutes with him, and then he would stop crying and he'd be ready to go back to class.
Good boy. Yep. Oh, there we go. Tired pup.
I call him my little bear.
It is very busy between medicines and accidents and boo-boos and illnesses, and it's lots of job security. I'm Janet Allio, and I'm the school nurse and the healthcare coordinator. And on an average, I see between 30 and 40 kids a day. They may appear in the morning with a bruise or a bump or something, but there's always a history. There's a history behind the illness. There's a history behind the injury. So one of my goals is to be able to meet that need, not just identify it. Some of our children leave here at night and they don't even know where they're going to go to bed at that night. I had a student that was not a frequent flyer in the clinic. You know, I do get frequent flyers that just like to come by. Sometimes it's just for a sweet hug, which I love, and other times it's try to escape out of class. But this boy, he was about the fifth grade, came in, and he'd been so sleepy he couldn't stay awake, so he came down, and I did an assessment and checked him out, and I always say, did you get to bed on time last night? And he said, no, I was up late. I couldn't sleep. I said, well, why couldn't you sleep? He said, because of the gunshots outside my bedroom window. We have the school-based health center. We have a dental clinic. We have on-site mental health so that our children can have therapy here at school. We were finding that some of the children who needed therapy, their parents didn't have transportation to get them to therapy, or they would have to miss the entire day. So now a child can miss 30, 40 minutes of the school day, get their therapy. The same with going to the doctor. They can only miss a half an hour instead of a whole day. Before a child can learn, they have to be emotionally in a good place.
Well, we do nutrition programs in the classrooms and gardening in the classrooms, windowsill garden, which we take out to our outside community garden, well, school-based garden, where the kids plant and grow vegetables. My name is Darrell Miller. We're on the west side of Charleston. I'm a member of Keep Your Faith Corporation, which is a community outreach group as well as a literacy organization. Well, I'm from here, so a lot of these kids, I know their parents and things. So it's funny when I be like, oh, you showing off? I know your daddy. And they laugh like, no, you don't. What's his name? Or I say their name, I'm like, no. So that's fun. And dealing with the kids in gardening, because, you know, When they get home with the vegetables, they have table talk. They have something to talk about, and they be so excited. And then a parent, I see a parent in the store, and they be like, well, now we buying vegetables when we come to the store. Thank you. And it be like a laugh, but it's beautiful because now not just introducing fresh fruits and vegetables, also give them a topic to talk about at the table instead of being on them phones, you know.
Tell me about your own childhood, your own school experience here on the West Side.
Growing up in school, I really couldn't read that good. I played sports and stuff, so I got bad. But being able to read was something always in my mind. Like when I go to school, I wouldn't want to get called on to read. So I had a disciplinary problem. You know, I was a bad kid because I didn't want to be made fun of, and I was embarrassed of it, really. But I prayed about it and I asked the Lord if he ever showed me how to read, I would show other people. And the Lord blessed me, you know. And so that's where Keep Your Faith Corporation came from. Learning how to read is still a process for me, you know. And so I really think it's special because you can read, pick up a book and be anywhere. You know, you can get away. And then you can use your education to get away if you really want to get out your neighborhood. So it's been a blessing to be able to allow to come into school and be able to share my story with kids and then talk to me about some of their issues and then get with their parents. You know, we got a basic needs program where we help with identification, social security cards, all that, filling out job applications, housing papers. And this year we just started a workforce development program. And for me, being here is, I think that's where I'm supposed to be right now, you know. Like my work has really just started.
My name is Lauren Farmer.
My name is Michael Farmer.
So I'm with the Bob Burdett Center. We're a nonprofit organization that provides after-school and summer programming to children on the West Side.
I am the regional coordinator for the Kanawha County Educational Alliance AmeriCorps Mentors Program.
We're married.
How'd you guys meet?
That's none of your concern. We met from a small group. I actually met her when I was on a date with somebody else a couple years ago, and I was actually trying to hook her up with a friend of mine years and years ago, and then a couple years later we kind of reconnected. I was actually working at a bank on the West Side, and I seen her come in. I was just like, oh, I need to give her a call. And then we ended up kind of getting connected. It was really youth related for me, was saying, I know you're in the field, I know you're doing this, I don't want to be connected to this career anymore, and really getting some wisdom from her about how do you get established, how do you get connected, how do we make this happen. When me personally, I felt very disconnected from urban, just working with urban youth. I hadn't done anything with it for years since I'd lived in South Carolina, and really just getting the wisdom from Lauren to say, you know, don't worry about so much understanding, but worry about being there and being consistent with them, and, you know, everything will happen. And here we are, so and so years later, with 9 to 10 after school programs just in Charleston, and, you know, having those specifically built on the West Side is what we really want to see.
It's just so important for us to be invested in the place where we are loving people. And that's why we've chosen to live here whenever he likes to tell a story. So I was in the process of buying my house on the West Side whenever we started dating. And he was a little salty about it. He had grown up in, you know, some not so nice neighborhoods and just didn't really want to place himself back in that situation. He really does believe, you know, loving God and loving your neighbor is the most important thing.
You can't make a change unless you're in the middle of that change. We can't just say, let's look at the issue from the outside and pop in for a little bit and then, you know, say, well, those kids will be okay after school, or they'll be okay when I'm not around. And that was a really big force as to why we said we're going to plant our church on the West Side. You know, one day we may see a harvest, one day we might not, but we've been very privileged to see our kids grow up and come through after school programming, getting involved in ministry. I actually just hired one of my kids as one of my AmeriCorps mentors. He's going to be working at one of mine and Lauren's programs. I remember talking to her and she was like, I was such a bad kid. I was like, yeah, you were. But, you know, being able to say, we spent these years with you, and now for her to be able to say, you planted seeds in my life, and now I want to do the same for these kids who are coming up. I mean, that shows right there the power of investment.
You guys have referred to many, many kids as your kids. Do you have kids of your own?
Well, that's a complicated question. But I'm currently pregnant with our first child.
Are you guys working on names for the baby? Do you have any names picked out?
We do. I like Langston Curtis Farmer. If it's a girl, Naomi Louise Farmer.
What do you hope Langston or Naomi's childhood is going to be like on the West Side?
Well, I hope it's filled with joy. I make the joke all the time. I tell our kids, because I think they're more excited than we are sometimes. I'm like, yeah, you're going to be here to babysit, right? But we make the joke all the time. I say, we've got to get you guys right so you can make sure that the next generation, my kid, has a better place to be. And we're seeing it here. I've always been a firm believer that it takes a generation before to affect the generation after. It's reciprocal. What you put in is what you're going to get out of it. You know, the word talks about, you know, what you reap, you'll sow. So we believe if we sow seeds of positivity and good things in these kids' life, that we're going to see that harvest in our lives, and that these will be the people who will be influencing our kids.
I really hope that we're not finding out the gender, so the baby, I don't want to call it, will just grow up in a neighborhood where they feel safe and secure, where they feel connected to their neighbors, that they really do develop that love of God and love of their neighbor.
You've been listening to Out of the Blocks.
From radio producer Aaron Hinken.
And music producer Wendell Patrick.
Special thanks to West Virginia State folklorist Emily Hilliard.
And the West Virginia Folklife Program at the West Virginia Humanities Council.
You can podcast this series. Check out photos online at wypr.org/out of the blocks.
Aaron and Wendell want to thank all of us
who took a leap of faith and shared our stories and our lives.
For WYPR and PRX,
this is Charleston, West Virginia, Westside.
Signing off.
Coming up on the next episode of Out of the Blocks, we are back in Baltimore to get to know the locals at a city market that's been running continuously for more than two centuries. Lexington Market is a huge honeycomb of food vendors and eateries, and it's at a major moment of transition right now. The old building is coming down soon, a new one is going to go up, and things are going to look and feel very different around there. Some people are thrilled, some people are worried. No one knows exactly what to expect, what's lost and what's gained when change comes to a historic city market. That's next time on Out of the Blocks. A special note of thanks, by the way, on the Charleston, West Virginia episode you just heard, a shout out to the NEA, the National Endowment for the Arts, for supporting this and all of our travel episodes as we continue to bring the Out of the Blocks documentary model around to other cities across the country. And thanks to you for listening. If you like the kinds of stories you hear on this program, do us a favor and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts if you're so inclined, or just tell a friend about the show. Thanks, and we'll do it again soon. Out of the Blocks is supported by PRX and produced with grant funding from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Maryland State Arts Council, the Hofberger Foundation, Patricia and Mark Joseph Shelter Foundation, Inc., the Sana and Andy Brooks Family Fund, the Peel Center, and the William G. Baker Jr. Memorial Fund, creator of the Baker Artist Portfolios, online at bakerartist.org.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.